the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. We have this on the line, Major Jim Lindsay, and he is a chaplain. He's been in the regular Army, and now he's in the Reserve. But he has been called to duty. He's actually been done a number of things, fascinating things on his own. And I thought maybe we could talk today about his experience when he went to New Orleans on his own to help the people there. Jim, thank you so very much for being with us.
Dr. Sten, it's an honor to be on your program.
Well, why don't you tell us a little bit about why you went to New Orleans and why you felt it was important, what you experienced when you were there, and what your impression was of the story about how the dikes broke. So why don't we just start with why did you go to New Orleans?
Well, Dr. Sten, I was called up by the United States government with a military unit from the Army National Guard.
All right, fine. So that's you went there then with the military. So
yes, sir.
How soon after the levees had broke did you move in?
We were mobilized on September 1st, and we arrived in New Orleans on September 3rd.
All right. Now, when did the levees break? Do you recall? Was that the 27th, 28th, or something around there? What was the date?
The levees broke on I believe August 29th.
All right, fine. So then, of course, you were mobilized very, very shortly afterwards, moved in with the National Guard, and did your forces move right into the city then to begin patrolling and preventing looting or what?
Yes, we did. On September 3rd, we arrived at Naval Air Station New Orleans, and on the afternoon of September 4th, the day of the shootout between the Federalists and the New Orleans Police Department, we went into the inner city and began doing patrols that afternoon.
No.
I went on patrols with my soldiers.
All right. Now you mentioned the shootout. Who was the shootout between?
Well, according to the Associated Press, there was a gun battle on September 4th, the day we went into the inner city. And the shootout was between federal agents and the New Orleans Police Department.
Now, why were the federal agents be shooting at the New Orleans police?
Well, according to the Associated Press, the New Orleans police thought that the federal agents were involved in sabotaging the levees. And so, as a result of the shootout, five or six federal agents were shot and killed.
Now, wait a minute. I never heard anything at all about that, Jim.
Well, and the reason is because the Council of Foreign Relations controlled media hushed the whole thing up, and you heard not one thing about it.
Well, do you have the article at all that you could get to me? I'd love to see that.
Well, I'd be glad to send you what I have, but I've got a printout of part of the Associated Press article.
All right, fine. I'd just love to see that, because certainly that's a story I've never heard before.
Well, the Associated Press later covered up and retold the story, and then they said that there were two civilians that were killed when we know that they were five or six federal agents that were killed.
Well, we heard there were some people walking across the bridge there that were gunned down. Supposedly they were workmen. Was this what you're speaking of now, or is that a different incident?
This may be the same incident.
All right.
I'm not sure, but it was down the Danziger Bridge.
All right, fine. So it may very well be that same incident we're talking about. Well, we'll be back here in just a moment. Right here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay. Our guest this afternoon is Major Jim Lindsay, the chaplain who's been in the regular Army. He's out of the regular Army now, but still with the National Guard unit. So he was mobilized very, very shortly after the levees broke in New Orleans. And so his unit moved into New Orleans. He was just telling us what happened, and you arrived there, what was it, the 3rd or the 4th of September?
September 3rd. And then on the 4th, we went from Naval Air Station New Orleans into the inner city and began patrols right away.
Now, were you in boats, or how were you patrolling?
We patrolled on foot in the dry areas and on boat where the floodwaters were.
All right, fine. Well, was there much in the way of looting, or were things fairly well organized there by the time you arrived?
The city was in utter chaos. Now, our unit was highly organized, and we were one of the first units called in. And in the first 10 days, my soldiers had cleared 11,000 houses.
And by clearing them, you made sure there was nobody still there? Or was that it? What did they do, and how did they go about clearing them?
Well, what the soldiers did, they went door to door, knocking on doors. And if people came to the doors, then they were given the option of being evacuated. If no one came to the doors, we were not allowed to go inside the houses, which poses a problem from my perspective. This leaves a great chance for people to remain inside, dying, who could not come to the doors, or already dead, and would not be counted in the numbers dead, since we could not go into the houses.
All right, fine. Well, but of course, did most of the people want to stay, or did most of the people want to be evacuated?
I think that most did want to be evacuated. However, many, many, many did want to stay and felt safer in their houses. They did not want to leave their houses. Many were afraid of not receiving their social security checks. Many were in fear of the unknown. Where would they go? After all, there were 15,000 to 20,000 people in the convention center where there was no organization, no food, no water, no blankets, no electricity, no lights, no running water, no toilet usage, and it would have been utter chaos for many of them to leave and go into the unknown, where they would not be taken care of very well.
All right, so basically there were a lot of the people then elected to stay in their houses. Now, were these houses primarily in the dry area of the town, or were these areas where there was some water on the ground?
Many were in the dry areas, but many were also flooded, where people were living in the upstairs of their homes and actually wanted to stay there.
All right, fine. We'll be back here in just a moment with Major Jim Lindsay. Well, Major Lindsay is telling us that his unit moved into town, and of course they began going door to door, and within a short period of time they'd cleared 11,000 houses. Many of them, of course, people had already left, and many of them people wanted to be evacuated. Many of them people wanted to stay at home because they felt more secure there, and they were living perhaps in the second floor of their house. The base floor, the first floor, was flooded, but the second floor they could live in. And did a lot of the people have food and supplies on hand?
Many private individuals did have their own supplies, but people in the convention centers and the hospitals did not, and they began to die. And you would have, for example, a lady living in a wheelchair in the convention center, and when she died, they simply rolled her to the side. They drug other bodies to the corners where they were piled on top of each other. You take Charity Hospital, where 200 patients were remaining. They were not evacuated before the hurricane hit, whereas they should have been. But as they began to die, they were taken to the stairwells and stacked on top of each other. Machines went out, would not work because electricity was out. You had no toilets working. You had no food, no water, and these patients began dying. It was a very grim situation.
Well, now, the people who were still in town, certainly they had been warned ahead of time, hadn't they? And they'd been told to leave, that the hurricane was coming. Did a lot of these stay because they didn't want to leave? Did they stay because they had no place to go? Did they stay because they had no means of getting out of town? Would they have left if there had been bus transportation, a place to go? What was your take on that, Jim?
20% of the population had no automobiles. That meant 100,000 people had no private automobiles. They did not know where they would go. They wanted to stay in their own homes, and many feared that they would lose government paychecks, Social Security benefits. They didn't know where they would be able to pick those up. And I think many people were afraid of being never allowed to return to their homes, which is going on right now.
Well, of course, there is a very conscious effort to keep people from getting their homes, because, of course, the big developers want to go in there and just to take that over and turn it into a big casino, which may or may not have anything to do with why the levees I didn't break until about an hour and a half after the flood had passed, after the storm had passed, which is rather strange. And it wasn't a Category 5 hurricane, it was a Category 3 hurricane. There was no reason for the levees to break, and they didn't break during the storm. They broke an hour and a half afterwards. Not in one place, not in two places, but in three places. And you have to ask yourself, why was this an act of God? Or, well, anyway, now certainly, was there any, lawlessness? What about the looting we heard so much about? Was this really a factor, or was this overblown, do you think?
Well, the looting certainly was a factor, and remember, I'm a U.S. military chaplain, and my intention is to be as objective as possible, but with the information that I have, looking at it objectively, I think that the word looting might be a smokescreen for a local civil war going on between the federal agents and the New Orleans Police Department. You have 100 or more New Orleans police officers who have disappeared from the face of the earth after the shootout with the federal agents. And this is referenced by the police captain of the 2nd District, who I met with personally, and also by Senator, I believe it's Senator Cleland, who talked about assassinations going on down there, possibly assassinations of police officers.
Who would be assassinating the police officers? Certainly, they had a real problem with the police officers, because a lot of them just sort of deserted their posts, is my understanding. And there was a question I've heard subsequently that a lot of these police officers never did exist. They were simply on the rolls. They were drawing salary, but they didn't exist, and somebody was pocketing their pay. Was there any truth to that?
Well, I haven't heard that, but the police captain told me himself that close to 300 police officers were gone.
In other words, they just took off. They wanted to look after their families. They didn't want to be there. This wasn't the sort of thing they signed on to. I know that there was a very, very serious problem because of dereliction of duty by a large segment of the New Orleans police force.
Well, that's what's been said. However, when you've got reports, verifiable reports, that at least 100 police officers have disappeared from the face of the earth through possibly murder, assassination, you've clearly got a problem here. U.S. Senator Max Cleland has called attention to a number of bodies that turned up in the Charity Hospital Trauma Center several days after the shootout on the levee. These bodies obviously assassinated with bullets in the back of their heads. And although there's been no official explanation for why this has occurred, the question has to be asked if the assassinated bodies recovered in the floodwaters had been witnesses to the levee sabotage, or if they were police officers themselves. And if you don't mind, I'd like to quote what Senator Cleland actually said.
Did you have it? Has this written out someplace?
Yes. I've got his comments right here in front of me. He said, "I think New Orleans has a real challenge on its hands, not just in recovering from the disaster, the natural disaster, but what has happened to the police department there, and then, of course, in the charity hospital there, the trauma center, a few days after the hurricane went through, a number of bodies wound up there assassinated with bullets in the back of their head."
Now, did he actually say that?
Yes, I've got the quote here in front of me. He said this last October, and he said, "Those corpses are over in a warehouse now, and nobody's really seen them but the pathologist, who told a friend of mine, who told me. So we have a massive cover-up here, I think, that has to be investigated independently." End of quote.
Well, that's a fascinating. I certainly hadn't heard that either, and I'd really love to get that.
Mayor Nagin also said to some media people that the levees may have been blown and that the military was gunning down unarmed civilians, and one senator called him on it. So you've got some people in office who are making these kinds of profound statements regarding deaths, assassinations, shootouts with federal agents and New Orleans Police Department, at least 100 missing police officers who are thought to may have been assassinated, and sabotage on the levees. And there are witnesses who have heard the explosions, and many of the civilians who are witnesses may have wound up dead as well.
Well, certainly we've heard the rumors that some of the people there really felt that there may have been explosions. But, of course, the implications of that are frightening. And yet, of course, we have to ask why the levees would have given way an hour and a half after the storm had passed. Well, then, of course, what about the... Now, were these regular army troops that were there? You were with the National Guard, and certainly your troops were well-disciplined and weren't going around shooting people, were they?
No, my soldiers were not. There were active duty soldiers, the 82nd Airborne, which were active duty soldiers, and mine with the California Army National Guard.
Now, the 82nd Airborne, this is regular Army. How can you bring those in? That's a violation of the Posse Comitatus law.
If they were enforcing law, then it's martial law, then it's military rule.
But, of course, was this, did they put in military law, martial law? And if they did, I still thought you could not bring in regular Army troops. You'd have to use National Guard. And that's how you control a situation. You don't bring in federal troops or people from Iraq, professional mercenaries like Blackwater. Did you run into the Blackwater mercenaries who were there?
I did not, but 82nd Airborne soldiers did run into private security firm agents.
Well, now, what were these mercenaries doing there? Because certainly there were lots of forces from all across America that wanted to come in. People from Fish and Game were there. Firefighters had come from all over the country, and they weren't allowed to come in. I mean, Americans weren't allowed to come in. American civilians weren't allowed to go in. So if they really needed help, why didn't they use them rather than bringing the military units and the mercenaries, the professional killers that are hired by the CIA?
Dr. Stan, these are good questions, and I would like to address, first of all, the issue of martial law. We were told in our staff meetings during the first week of our being in New Orleans that New Orleans was under martial law.
All right, so they declared a state of emergency, and it was under martial law, and they were there, of course, to stop the looting. Was looting a major factor?
Yes, looting was a major factor.
Now, we'd heard that they'd actually brought in groups from other cities, that groups had come in from Jackson, Mississippi, and other areas, specifically to loot. Was there any truth to that, or was these mostly local looters?
Well, again, there's a lot of unknowns here.
All right, fine.
Because the police officers going around in civilian clothing and unmarked cars, if they were really being picked off one at a time by federal agents, they may have been going around in civilian clothing to disguise their identity. And when we were told they were under martial law, my soldiers were stopping police officers and the police captain himself of the 2nd District, demanding to know their identity and where they were going, what they were doing. And this may have posed a risk to their lives if they were, in fact, being hunted down or picked off by federal agents.
No, I'm sorry. Are you suggesting that federal agents were shooting a police officer?
Well, clearly the Associated Press had already stated that on September 4th.
All right, fine. So, but these were police officers who were wearing uniforms?
They were going in civilian attire to protect their identity.
Well, why would they want to protect their identity?
If there was a battle going on between federal agents, and if it were true that 100 police officers were assassinated, then I think I'd, too, want to protect my identity.
All right, fine. Well, we're going to be back here in just a moment or two with Major Jim Lindsay and learn more about his experiences there in New Orleans during that tragic period when the government was doing everything they could to keep help from coming from outside, from all across America, the people with their airboats and motorboats, and were bringing in the military. Well, this is Dr. Stan. You pick up the story there, Jim.
Sure.
Go right ahead and tell the story.
Well,
now, did you see? What about the helicopters? Were they evacuating the people off the roofs when you were there? Had the FEMA decided to allow the supplies to come in? The people with the airboats and the motorboats from all over the area who wanted to come in and help, or were the FEMA keeping everybody out so we would have continued confusion?
Well, this was an issue of control. FEMA wanted to control everything that was going on, and I heard of reports that they were actually keeping the Red Cross out initially, and they may have been keeping other sources out too. Yes, helicopters were evacuating people out. The people were being taken to the corner of Napoleon Avenue, and I think it was Charles Street. In my area, that was one of the locations where they were brought to from the neighborhoods. And from there, we would take them in 5-ton trucks to the convention center, and there they'd be helicoptered out.
Well, were they being helicoptered from the convention center? I thought that they really didn't do something for several days. Or was it over at the Superdome that they were just keeping them there?
Well, there too. They were being taken to the Superdome, and they were being bussed out. They were being taken out all kinds of places. But I wanted to address the question regarding the private security firms that you raised, such as Blackwater. And in the French Quarters, here's an example where there was some interface between private security firms and 82nd Airborne. And also, we mentioned martial law. There was some backpedaling going on. After we were told night after night during the first week of our being there that New Orleans was under martial law, we were told that there's been a mistake. They were never under martial law. Rewind. It never happened. That's basically what we were told. Now, regarding why there were 200 private security firms that were brought to New Orleans before the military got there is a very strange thing. Now, in the French Quarters, what some of the 82nd Airborne soldiers had witnessed were that some of the private security agents had invaded a private home and were throwing personal belongings of some people who had lived there who were evacuated out the balcony and onto the street below. And the 82nd Airborne soldiers were very concerned about why this was going on, and they had jurisdiction there, and so they asked their commander why this was happening. Well, the soldiers were given no answers, and they were simply reassigned silently to another area.
So Blackwater, then, which really ties in, I'm sure, to the CIA, the Central Intelligence Agency, because they use these professional mercenaries. They use them in large numbers over in Iraq. In fact, nobody really knows what they're doing over in Iraq.
Exactly.
And, of course, we know that they were really giving all the orders for the torture there in Abu Ghraib prison. We know that certainly the blowing up of some of the mosques over there has been professional jobs known by people or done by people who knew how to use explosives. And, of course, blowing up mosques creates an incendiary situation, is fomenting a civil war. And we don't really know what the CIA is doing there at all over in Iraq. So, but let's stay right here with what's going on in New Orleans. So we've got the Blackwater. What are there, about 200 Blackwater, mercenaries there?
I don't know how many, but there were actually 200 firms. Blackwater was simply one of them. So I would imagine thousands of these private agents hired by the federal government.
Hold that right there. Well, Major Lindsay's just talking about the total confusion there, and Blackwater's there, and a lot of these private firms, or mercenary firms, hired by the government are there. And what's really so interesting is that they're bringing in their hired mercenary, they're bringing in regular army troops in violation of posse comitatus, but they're not allowing groups of, I mean, there were hundreds of firemen who came from all across America, were sent there to help. And they were sent, I think, into Atlanta, some other city, for some lectures on tolerance and on sexual harassment and how to deal with that sort of thing. They weren't allowed to go and help. The same thing. There were literally hundreds and hundreds of people from Fish and Wildlife and other government agencies trained to deal with situations like this, and they were kept out. And so they're bringing in the mercenaries, they're bringing in the military. Now, Sydney, there was martial law, and then there wasn't martial law. After a few days there, did things begin to get into some sort of order at all, or how long did the chaos continue?
Well, the chaos continued actually the entire month we were there, though we did see a lot of improvement. For example, at the end of the first week that we were there, the water began to be pumped out thanks to one of my soldiers whose civilian job was water systems development. And you might have heard this in nationwide news, in Newsweek and CBS. My soldier, Sergeant Zeller, he had shown city officials and their workers how to get the water pumps working. And so it's because of us that the water began to be pumped out. So that greatly helped, and we were able to go on foot more house to house. But you mentioned the numbers of breaks. Actually, there were, according to a report that I have, after the storm had passed, 50 breaks in the levees were found. 50.
Well, that's quite a few.
Oh, yes. So why would 50 breaks occur by themselves without any help?
Well,
after the storm had already passed, this is quite interesting.
Well, of course, all I have is what I read in the newspaper. I wasn't actually there. Did you see many of these breaks? Because we're told that, you know, there were three, and you're suggesting there were 50. Did you actually see them, or what sort of report was that?
Well, I saw three of them myself, but I've got photos of the ones that I saw. I did not see all of them. Remember, my job is a military chaplain. I'm doing field worship services, counseling my soldiers, critical incident stress debriefs, praying for local people, networking with the pastors, networking with police chaplains, visiting the police captain who kept giving me intel to give to my commander. After all, chaplains are the eyes and ears for their commanders. So information we are able to have access to, we can certainly pass on to our commanders. But so I was busy with ministry. But one of the photos that I have, taken from a helicopter, taken by one of my own soldiers, clearly shows, I believe, evidence of an explosion.
You're talking about demolition of the levees.
Yeah. I mean, I see in my photo massive amounts of earth that was moved aside, with the top of the earth still showing above the water, and the concrete, steel-reinforced concrete wall busted out. Now, when water flows through a canal, it flows through. It doesn't go sideways and just bust through steel-reinforced concrete and millions of tons of earth. But I've got this photo, and I don't think you'll see this on CBS.
Well, perhaps maybe we can even make a copy of it. I would love to see it myself.
I'd be glad to provide it for you, sir.
All right. Well, I think it's important for these people to be skeptical about the stories we're told, because so often they're not true. In fact, Michael Brown, who worked for FEMA, you remember poor old Michael Brown was caused to bear the brunt of this, but I read an article yesterday where, of course, he's testifying, he's coming back and saying, look, everybody in government's lying to you. If you tell the truth, you're out of a job. I lost my job because I tried to do a good job. I told the president beforehand, because the president claims he had no idea there was any danger. And, of course, they have videos of the president being told there was a danger of the levees giving way. But, of course, all of this has to be covered up. We can't have the American people thinking that our leaders might not tell the truth.
Well, Michael Brown, he's the one who leaked the video to the Associated Press to get the truth out.
That was that the video where the president is being told, you know, before this, before he goes for his guitar playing trips?
Yeah, before the hurricane hit, President Bush is being warned about the grave dangers of the hurricane that's coming, and that it could overtop the levees.
Well, then, of course, if they knew that, why, of course, this is still basically a state issue unless they're called and asked to come in. And only at that time, you know, should there be any federal aid. But certainly, why didn't they mobilize immediately the National Guard? The National Guard should have been there ahead of time, because they knew that this may very well hit New Orleans. You would have thought they would have mobilized the National Guard before the hurricane hit, not wait until afterwards. Well, we'll be back in just a moment or two with our special guest, Major Jim Lindsay. A lot of unanswered questions. I mean, countless billions of dollars wasted, tens of thousands of trailers and motorhomes just sinking into the mud. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and there's so many unanswered questions about what happened, how you could have any agency as inefficient as FEMA unintentionally, and why they don't simply dissolve the whole situation and go back to where it was before we had the Office of Homeland Security. It seems to me that we have sort of a systematic incompetence. Do you have that feeling, Jim? Or do you think that these people are purposely incompetent to cover up the fact that billions and billions and billions of dollars have disappeared and nobody's quite sure where they went?
Well, what I try to ask myself is, what does the government want out of national catastrophes. What is it they're looking for? And I recall Franklin Delano Roosevelt stating that nothing that happens in politics happens by accident. So after something like 9-1-1 or Hurricane Katrina or other national disasters or events that we are getting ourselves into, look at what happens afterwards. In other words, see the fruit of what's going on. What I'm driving to is that as a result of the failure of FEMA and Homeland Defense, which some say was they were set up to fail because the government might have an agenda. Now, I'm not saying they do or don't, but after it was all over, you heard President Bush talking about the military taking over future national disasters. Well, this means doing away with the Posse Comitatus Act, which he stated. And if you have that happening, then you're going to have Mexico, Canada, and the United States joining in the biggest military dictatorship in the history of mankind, because NORTHCOM would be the one to handle martial law. And North Command has jurisdiction over Mexico, Canada, and the United States. This would make President Bush the most powerful dictator in world history.
Well, Jim, I don't think most people can accept the fact that anybody would want to be a dictator in America, but I would ask, why not? I mean, after all, Adolf Hitler was democratically elected, Benito Mussolini was democratically elected, and there are people who want power.
Oh, yeah.
And there are people who would even create wars so they can expand their power over the lives of their people. Adolf Hitler was an excellent example. And what people have forgotten that Senator Prescott Bush, who was the grandfather of the current president, his firm was indicted for their close association and financial help for Adolf Hitler. Prescott Bush and Adolf Hitler, get out your computer, go up there and Google it in, you'll find the reference, and they were indicted for their close work with Adolf Hitler. I guess maybe the apple doesn't fall very far from the tree. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this afternoon, Major Jim Lindsay, he's telling us some amazing things about what happened there in New Orleans. Now, as time went by, did the supplies begin to get in there? Did they get all the people off of the roofs? How long was it before they really had the people evacuated who needed to be evacuated?
Well, during the month that we were there, I can say that everyone that wanted to be evacuated were not evacuated, because I know firsthand that people were left in their homes dying. For example, they would have gladly been evacuated if they were strong enough and in good health enough to get to their doors to open the doors. But because we were not allowed to go into homes where they did not answer, people were left dying. For example, in one house in our area of jurisdiction, law enforcement had cleared a specific house, the house of Edgar Hollingsworth, a Korean War veteran. When my soldiers went down that same street days later, his door happened to be open, but his house was already marked cleared. Well, my soldier went to the door and looked inside the screen because the door was open and saw a man on the couch. Well, he went inside and thought the man was dead because he was that far gone. He was skin and bones. He was in his 70s. But his eyes moved. So we rescued him, put an IV in him, and this went all over America on nationwide news. Well, he lived long enough to see his next of kin, but then he died a few days later because he was so far gone. But here's an example. I happened to have the privilege of participating in the funeral, by the way, but it was pretty sad. He was like one of our family because we rescued him. But how many more homes where they didn't have the strength to open up the door, these people were left inside dying or were already dead? The numbers of dead, the death toll may be much, much higher than we know, because we haven't gone inside these houses.
Well, now, of course, they've been into all of them by now, haven't they? And, in fact, in a lot of areas, they're beginning to demolish the houses over the objection of the people who own the houses.
Well, in early January, the federal government was prepared to have 44,000 homes demolished. But the people began to fight for their homes, and they literally put their bodies between the wrecking ball and the houses. And they had to go to court to stop another 60,000 plus homes from being demolished. These poor people are literally fighting for their homes, which they say are good enough to be remodeled or refurbished. Many of them are brick houses, and they're still standing. Many brick houses were completely blown apart, but the government has a plan to demolish 270,000 homes, and many of them are salvageable, and these people want their homes.
Well, my understanding is, of course, we've actually talked to a man named Brandon Darby, who's down there, and what they could do is they get a team of people, of volunteers, who go in and pull out all the sheetrock, both off the walls and the ceiling, and then they'll take the, of course, paint the studs with the Clorox solution to kill the mold, and then, of course, they just put the walls back up, because structurally they're sound, but they just pull a mold, and, of course, once they get it out, they just show it everything out the street, then they have to, of course, get new furniture, but at least they have a house to live in. And this is what a lot of these are really very, very poor people. And isn't it really the poor section of town that they want to take the homes away from?
The poor and middle class. You've got people in Louisiana who are trying to pay mortgages on destroyed property. They're going bankrupt and have little protection for the new bankruptcy law passed by the Congress and pushed by President Bush. And FEMA is handing out randomly notices that houses will be demolished, and they're not notifying even most of the people. There's a land grab going on there, and some people say this is a deal with the devil. Republican Representative Richard Baker's Recovery Corporation bill would buy out destroyed properties from their owners and resell them to exploitative developers. So the land grab is going on, and it's a very real, and the poor people are fearing for the loss of their property and won't receive the monetary value for it.
And I think this is the way the trick is played. This is the way the game is played, and the rich get richer and the poor get richer. But it is the government that intervenes on the side of the rich to exploit the poor. And what better way than a flooded city? And the question is then, did this flood as an act of God or an act of greed? And I think that we really need to ask that question very seriously. And I don't think anybody back in Washington, D.C. wants to ask the hard questions. They want to give you all the fluff, and they want to pose in front of the television cameras, and they want to be so concerned about us common folks. But the reality is there really is an agenda often behind what's going on. And perhaps one day we'll find out what happens. Now, after a few weeks, did the local police begin to get organized again?
Well, some of the police officers who did take their families to safety did return, but there were hundreds that have never been able to be contacted, and their whereabouts are completely unknown. You had many police departments from around the country coming down to augment the New Orleans Police Department. So, yes, after time, more forces came in to assist with the rescue and retrieval operations.
Well, did it sort of vary in the in different districts? Because didn't each district have a police captain there in charge of it, and some were good and some were bad?
Yes, you had various districts, and each one had their own police captain.
Now, what about the mayor? The mayor got a lot of publicity, and he was going to blame the president for all the problems. And yet, of course, it was his city. He was a man who was really in charge. And, you know, I think he was just, in fact, my understanding is he took off and left the city when it looked like it was going to be flooded and set up his headquarters for the city of New Orleans in Baton Rouge or something else. And then he comes back to pose for the cameras and to meet the governor and then to be there when the president gets there. But he was the man who should have been leading this whole thing. The big question is, they had literally hundreds of school buses that they could have used to get those people out of the city. And, of course, instead of doing that, they'd let them sit there and get flooded. And then, of course, when they began to evacuate the people, they began sending them not to local camps or facilities. They sent them all over the country to make it so difficult for them ever to get back. I even heard that they sent some of the people from New Orleans to Alaska. Why Alaska? Why? Because that's where FEMA sent them.
Well, people have been sent to one-third of the states, but it's very interesting that our president has declared a state of an emergency in all 48 states of the continental U.S., when in two-thirds of these, the people from Louisiana and the other areas did not even go to. So we are under a state of emergency, and it's kind of weird why he has declared this. But it looks to me, my concern is based on objectivity, and my concern is that we are heading for military dictatorship in this country. Again, I look at what is the government doing after these events. We want military rule under North Command. Our Constitution is being dismantled. Our freedoms are being lost. And there's a government land grab in New Orleans.
Well, I think, of course, the important thing is, how do you handle an emergency? Why you mobilize the National Guard? And the National Guard comes in with a military force if needed. The trouble is, they've got our National Guard over there in Iraq fighting for democracy, while they bring a military in to our communities and violate our laws. And where is the outcry from our senators? And where is the outcry from our congressmen? It's deafening in its silence.
Well, the congressmen are actually in favor of doing away with the Posse Comitatus Act. They don't seem to be representing the people and representing our Constitution.
Now, I think for our citizens out there, the Posse Comitatus was passed back in the 1870s, I believe it was, and it was because when the Northern troops were occupying the South, they were ruthless and brutal in their treatment of their fellow countrymen, and because war breeds hatred and viciousness, and so they passed a law in Washington, D.C., that you could not use American military troops to occupy American land, and the American military could not be used against American citizens. That's what Posse Comitatus was all about, because, unfortunately, power breeds corruption, and there are people who want power. And absolute power corrupts absolutely everyone.
So I think you're absolutely right. But back to FEMA. 2 years ago, FEMA outsourced a simulation of Hurricane Katrina. They actually outsourced preparation and planning for a Category 5 hurricane to strike New Orleans. And they paid Louisiana State University's Hurricane Center to do this study. And they were paid $800,000. 2-3 years ago.
But of course they knew exactly what was going to happen. They knew that they should use the school buses or bring in, you know, Greyhound buses and get those people out of the city.
They
knew that ahead of time, and somebody refused to carry out this extensive plan, which was a very good plan, and nobody's ever said why the mayor didn't implement that.
Well, I think it's also interesting that Louisiana State University, though they were paid nearly $1 million 3 years ago, they did not produce the written results until just a few days before the hurricane struck. However, still, 2 days before it struck, FEMA had the opportunity to line up 1,000 school buses and get ready to evacuate people before the hurricane hit, and they didn't do it. You had people in a charity hospital, as I said, begun to die, and Memorial Baptist Hospital. You had people in nursing facilities where the staff up and walked out, and all the elderly people, all of them died. This is inexcusable.
I know, and of course, there was even a question that there may have been some euthanasia in some of the hospitals. I don't know if there's any truth to that, but that question was raised. They said, you know, they're going to die anyway. Maybe we ought to just sort of help them along. There is that, unfortunately, this attitude among some people, totally utilitarian. So, and of course, apparently there was just chaos in some of those hospitals as people were trying to break into the hospitals for food or for medicines and things of that sort. And said some of the doctors who stayed behind to look after the patients were really fearing for their lives right here in the United States.
Absolutely. I think it's, I want to share that Joe Alba, the first director of FEMA under President Bush, he said that the top three concerns domestically was a terrorist attack in New York, a Hurricane 5 storm coming to New Orleans, and an earthquake in San Francisco. And it's my observation that two of these events have come to pass, which he thought would come to pass, and we weren't prepared for either one. And it just strikes a funny chord to me as, how do they know these things are going to happen before they happen?
Well, maybe they're good guesses, or maybe, of course, there's a spiritual component to it. We know that, the hurricane hit, I think, was Monday night. And, of course, on Wednesday, they were going to begin their decadence festival there, where hundreds of thousands of homosexuals would come in and dance naked and do all the other things in the streets. And, of course, San Francisco is one of the wickedest places in the world today. Really the center of so much of the depravity we see. I mean, I believe God does interfere in the affairs of men one way or another. Sometimes we don't recognize his hand, but I believe it's there.
Exactly. I do believe this happens, and I think that a lot of sin was wiped out in New Orleans, but also a lot of the good things were wiped out too, and a lot of people's homes were wiped out. And a lot of this could have been prevented. And God forbid that these levees were actually sabotaged and exploded. But there are eyewitnesses that lived near 17th Street levee saying that they heard loud explosions just prior to the raging waters flooding the Ninth Ward.
Well, now, I've read this in a number of reports. Did you talk to anybody who had actually heard the explosions or what they thought were explosions?
No, because many of these people were already gone by the time we arrived. And you did ask the question, why did we take so long to get there? And that's one thing that was boggling our minds, too. Why did we wait so long to be called up?
They should have been called up. They should have called up the National Guard beforehand when they knew this was coming and that the city of New Orleans was really so susceptible to a major catastrophe. And you have to ask yourself, where was the governor of the state of Louisiana? And why doesn't anybody ask her why she didn't mobilize things ahead of time? And she wants to blame President Bush. Now, President Bush is not one of my favorite people, but, you know, it is not the president's primary responsibility to react to a local catastrophe of this sort. It's the governor and the mayor and, of course, the board of supervisors of the county. And nobody seems to want to hold them responsible.
There are a lot of unanswered questions, and we don't know what kind of a dilemma they were put in. We don't know what the governor was told to do or what not to do, if she was told to do anything. But we don't have the answers, and I think the people of America have a right to know what took place.
Well, I'll tell you, we'll never find out when they have the hearings in Washington, D.C., because those are simply to sort of massage the people and make them think they're doing something, to pose in front of the camera, to ask difficult questions. But they're never going to try to get to the bottom of it, because any senator who really tries to get a good job will never get reelected. Or it'll be very hard to get reelected, because the media will come after him and the big foundations and the big corporations. They don't want people to tell the truth in Washington, D.C. They want people who go along to get along. We saw that with Senator Bob Smith. When the president did everything he could to get this conservative, God-fearing, pro-life senator out and put in Sununu, who is pro-choice, he's wrong on every side, and of course they defeated Bob Smith in the Republican primary, intentionally violating all the laws of the Republican Party to interfere in Republican primaries. Well, if you're out there in the listening audience, you have a question for Major Lindsay, give us a call. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Jim, do you have a website or anything you'd like to get out before we end the program?
I'm the International Director of Operation Freedom, and we provide a ministry to military personnel. And I'd like to give out our phone number, which is 214-608-0104. Our website's being constructed at the time.
All right. Now, whenever you give a telephone number out on radio, you always give it twice. Go ahead and give it once more.
214-608-0104.
All right, fine. And, of course, that's one of the things I always have to tell people who are not doing a lot of radio. Give that telephone number out twice, because people have to get the pen out, and then they forget the number. And so if you didn't get the number, while you get in touch with us, we'll let you know and put you in touch with Major Jim Lindsay. He's got a lot of fascinating stories, and we'll be talking to him, I'm sure, on other occasions. But the big question is, what really happened? I mean, why would a Category 3 storm, and that's all it was, break those levees, and of course in a number of places, an hour and a half after this storm had passed? And that, of course, is the major question sort of like those magic passports that floated in the ground, you know, out of the North Tower and out of the plane that got, went down in Pennsylvania. These things just don't happen. I mean, they're obviously planned. We'll be back here in just a moment here at Radio Liberty to wrap up this program with Major Lindsay. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Jim, you've got about 3 minutes to wrap up the program. What is the message you'd like to leave with our listeners about New Orleans?
Americans need to be vigilant. We need to not only pray for our country and pray for our leaders, we need to be activists. We need to be out there defending our constitutional rights and fighting for our rights, because we are losing our freedoms left and right. We need to petition. We need to protest. We need to get involved to fight for America. We need to defend our homes, our families, and do whatever it takes to preserve freedom, including freedom of religion, because our Constitution is under assault and is being dismantled piece by piece as we speak. So please pray for America. Support Dr. Stan. Support organizations that are out there getting involved and getting the truth out. And be concerned about the poor people in New Orleans. There may be 60,000 that are dead. We don't know the numbers that are dead, but we need to be involved and not believe what we're being told over television, because it's controlled by the Council of Foreign Relations. We need to get the truth out.
All right, fine. Well, thank you so very much, Jim. We really appreciate so much your being with us. God bless you. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Dr. Stan.
All right, fine. And, of course, that's Major Jim Lindsay, and I hope we can, of course, get all that information he was talking about, some of the articles that he's been able to collect on this, that are giving a little different slant on what's going on. But I would simply point out to you, Dave, there are people in key positions in government who have a different agenda. Why do you think that they won't guard our borders if we're in the middle of a war on terrorism and they refuse to guard the borders? They refuse to go after the employers who are hiring all the illegal aliens in violation of federal law, which they promised they would enforce if we gave them the amnesty back in 1986. And the truth of the matter is, there are people in government who hate America, who do not want us to be a sovereign nation, and that's why they are keeping our borders open. They want a multicultural, multilingual society, and they want to flood us with people from all over the world, and of course, they want to merge us into this new world order and one world religion. And when you understand that, you understand why the president is so insistent in having the company owned by Dubai, the Emirates of Dubai, control our ports, and why they're encouraging other countries to come in and purchase our factories and purchase so many of the other parts of the natural wealth of this country, and why we're outsourcing our jobs and sending our factories and our wealth and the future of our children to other countries and throughout the world. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan and Sydney. I hope you enjoyed our interview with Major Lindsay, and we're going to try to get the information he talked about, the documentation for some of the rather startling things that he said. At this point, I do want to mention something that you can do to help if you'd like to, and you're able to. We're going to have to do another reprint on Radio Liberty, on Brotherhood of Darkness, my book, which gives you the background of what's going on. And so we're making the offer we did, about a year ago, and that is, if you would like to buy a case of the books, and there's 64 books in there, and you get the case for $149.95 plus whatever the shipping, and if you're in California, of course you have to pay the tax, but it's a wonderful bargain. You can afford to give the books away. You know, you can sell them for $12.95. They cost $12.95 each if you go out and buy them, or you can sell them for whatever you want to, or you can give them away or lend them out. But this is one of the best weapons we have. So if you'd like to buy a case of Brotherhood of Darkness, as we did before, and we won't bill you until actually the books are in our hands and ready to go out, why, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. We did this with the DVD of Brotherhood of Darkness, and of course we were able to get those made up, and if you did not get one, of course you can get one at full price now. It's an excellent product. Brotherhood of Darkness DVD, we're very proud of the way it came out. You can get it on video, but if you'd like to get the DVD, Brotherhood of Darkness, the number is 1-800-544-8927. We have a great new talk. It's called World Revolution, and actually you'll see about a 20-minute interview I did with Ambassador Earl Smith, who's long since gone to be with God, but Ambassador Smith was one of the few billionaires I ever talked to. He was very gracious. You'll see my interview with him back in 1980. He was the American ambassador to Cuba, who was there when we turned the country over to a known communist. They knew Fidel Castro was a communist. We brought Fidel Castro to power knowing he was a communist, and he'll tell you the story of exactly what happened and what we did. And so that's the World Revolution. We've called this the fourth floor, but this is a much better rendition. The interview is better. My talk is a lot better. Really very, very, very pleased with this product and the World Revolution. Of course, then there's my talk on planned population reduction we did for the Prophecy Club, and they really do intend to destroy the majority of the people in America. And you say, that's crazy talk. Nobody would want to do that. And I would ask you, they wouldn't? Well, when we outlaw DDT, we condemn between 50 and 100 million people to death, because that's what's died since 1973 when we outlawed DDT, about 3 million a year. Contrary to everything you read today, they tell you it's only a million a year. It's about 3 million a year. And then, of course, here in America, we have 60 million people with a sexually transmitted viral disease. Is that a successful public health policy? Or a successful genocidal policy? We have, in America, 500,000 Americans have died of AIDS, another million infected. Is that a successful public health policy? Throughout the world, about 30 million are dead, another 50 million infected. Is that a successful public health policy? Or a successful genocidal policy? In Botswana, the latest figures, 46% of the pregnant women who come in to be tested there are HIV infected, and they're all going to die. The people who believe in genocide are doing a great job, but of course nobody is telling you that there really are people, and we will give you their writings. If you would like to read Jacques Cousteau's article, the article where he's quoted in the UNESCO Courier in November of 1991, just give us a call, 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. As for the Jacques Cousteau article, but we hope that you'll get the other items we've talked about. And you have our permission to copy anything that we've produced. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Our website is RadioLiberty.com. And understand, this is a spiritual battle. There really is organized evil out there. You can't understand the wars of the last century or the coming war that is coming very soon without an understanding of the organized evil that exists. Pray for America. Please pray for Radio Liberty.